Mr. Man, Reel 5.
We're talking about weapons at the end of the last tape, Mr. Man. Did you have, were you introduced to grenades and grenade training?
Hand grenade, yes. He used to call it the Mills bomb, hand grenade. And basically it was a small pineapple looking hand piece. And you used to put the unscrew the cap at the bottom of it and insert the detonator, which was almost a J shape. You would put that in. Oh, sorry, first of all, you would get the handle out at the side, or a pin out, and then the hand piece would come out, which was held the plunger into place. And by setting that in the safe position, which was up, and the pin back in, you would then put in your detonator, screw the cap in, and you were all ready to go. To get a bit of action out of that, all you had to do was hang on to the grenade and the hand lever, or hand piece down with the side, pull the pin out, and when you threw at your object, the handpiece automatically threw in one direction, the plunger went down, hit the detonator, and it would have usually 7 seconds before it went off. In action, they used to have some even down as far as 2 seconds, so you just want to fling that off for the best.
What was the process of the actual training itself to throw?
Well, the training, actually, when we left Barnard Castle, I suppose you could say in with the training, I'm moving up here to Barnard Castle.
So no, I'm thinking about the actual training of how to throw it and where you threw it so you didn't blow yourselves up.
Well, there was a rifle range of training area down near Hurlwith. We used to go down there and the flinging of a grenade, the throwing of a grenade, it was just sort of, you were in a pit and there was an objective, maybe an old tin or something like that at a distance, and the objective was to throw the grenade as near the tin as you could. But
did you have any hair-raising experiences in that training situation?
Not in that, touch wood, the went off, but I have known of men who have been involved in it, with other battalions of course, where the grenade hadn't functioned. And of course that was a risky business, somebody had to go out. I say, but fortunately for us trainees, or rookies as they used to call us, it would always be maybe a senior MCO or even an officer would go out and have a look at it. Depending on the officer as well, if he didn't want to go himself, he just needs it or somebody, so he was still in the fit.
Did you do any training for gas precautions?
Gas, we only did the training. We were given samples of gas to give us an idea what the smelt like. It was like the mustard gas, I just can't remember what the flavours were now. It was only a very small sample. But basically the training for gas was your gas cape, which you had mounted in battle order. It was above the small pack on your back, and it was rolled up with a cord coming to the front where you could pull, which would release the roll, and then you could shuffle yourself into it. And of course you have to have your respirator or gas mask on. The position of that in battle order was on the chest, and it was a case of open the flap, pull the respirator out and onto your face with it. But later on, sort of in Italy really, battle order, there wasn't the fear of gas attacks. It didn't you see, you still used to take it for a while in action, and then it got to the stage where you didn't even take it into action. So there wasn't the fear of that.
Whilst you were at Hyington, did you train and up to taking guard duties? Did you have guard duties?
Oh yes, I used to do guard duties.
What was the process of actually mounting the guard?
Well, mounting the guard, I don't know if we mentioned this before, but anyhow, the guard parade was four private soldiers who were initially to go on guard parade, and there was mainly a sergeant who was a guard commander and a lance corporal or a junior MCO. When you got onto guard parade, I remember there was a small square near the Naffy canteen, we used to line up there, or marched up, of course, with Dan Cummins. Behind us was the picket lines, which worked in with the guard, but mainly the guard. The officer would come round for inspection, good attention, he's going round here and poking with his stick here and there, but things went pretty well. We were four smart lads and never returned. But after he'd inspected our initial appearance and inspected our rifles, he would then walk back to his position looking at the guard, and they would announce one as a stick orderly, which was supposed to be the smartest one of the lot. I'm sure we mentioned this before.
I think we've touched on it, but we haven't gone right through the whole process.
But the stick orderly, he was selected the smartest one, and his job was just to run about with bits of orders from, say, one officer to another, or round the camp, his general runabout for messages one to another. For his day, while the other three were on guard, he was doing that, and the next day, of course, he'd be changed on the next day. From being on parade and that picked out, we would then be marched up to the guard room. The guard that was in the guard room already there would be called out, guard turn out, facing the, say, them as the old guard and us as the new, of course, then went through the routine of changing over the guard. There was your guard, other guard, you numbered 1, 2, 3. And then you would get the new guard, say number one, to take post, in which he would go beside the standing sentry, and they would change positions. And then it would be the old sentry to fall in with the other two, ready to go off. The sergeant or guard commander would go in the guard room, and they would discuss any notes or messages or instructions that you'd go. Instructions for a sentry was read out before the guards took post. And if I remember right, after that, the new guard, the sentry was to stand fast, and the remaining two new guard were to fall out into the guard room. And the old guard would then march away, and they were finished for the day.
What was the period of the guard?
The period of the guard, it was a 24-hour guard. You used to go and stand on sentry duty for 2 hours, and then you would have 4 hours off. And that, of course, was between the three of you. There was an extra person there who used to go, well, another soldier. He was like an orderly in one sense as well, but his duty was to go down and bring the meals up when they were ready. If you were on sentry duty, when the meals came up, they would change over the guard. One of the guards would come out, and guards change over, and the other one would go in on his meal, and then he would come out again, change over, and back on sentry till he finished his two hours. During the night, there would also be the orderly officer come round with a senior NCO, and you would naturally try to keep alert for that. And when they were approaching, as you would with anybody approaching the guardhouse, it was a case of halt, who goes there? And the answer would be friend. Then you would say, advance, friend, be recognised. They would advance, the officer would look at you, and he'd say, turn out the guard. Well, then he would be stood to attention, and he would turn out guard, Mr. Gate Rider. He would say, stand to the guard, and then he would give them a couple of minutes if possible, unless the officer says get them out, and then you have to say, guard, turn out. So full guard turned out, the officer inspected them. After that, any comments were passed to the guard commander. Anybody who hadn't met the requirements, he could be put on a charge. If he'd come out maybe without his rifle, which was far, I mean, half asleep sometimes, and when they come out. But really, it went off pretty well. I think they used to it. After he'd inspect them, it was a case of sentry stand fast and the men of the guard room dismissed.
Was the standard of turnout for a guard very high? Was it?
Oh yes, it was high. I said, I mean, you had to be fully polished up, all of you, as you might say. I mean, there's no getting away with saying, oh, well, I'm not bad, I won't bother shaving. If you want to shave, just if there was a sign of it. There was one big guard duty as well. I mean, there was a sentry box there, but you only used to more or less go in the sentry box when it was cold weather, rain or snowing or anything like that. But there had to be a sentry out there, and at night time you could get very, very tired. You used to have a fixed bayonet when you were on sentry duty as well, which was the old type, as a First World War bayonet, not the short little pig stickers, as we call them, when the short little bayonets came into use. But with the bayonet, if you feel a bit drowsy on parade, what often would I have done it myself? You would get the bayonet point and just put it under your chin, where the bone is, to the front of your chin, and let the point just stick in there, and that used to keep you awake. But no, not enough.
Were there cells in the guard room for anyone that was on charge?
There were cells there, and there couldn't be more utility. There was just a case of a bit of a bunk with a blanket on it, maybe. The cells floors, they were polished like a red, what they call it now, sort of a red polish. They were painted with like a floor paint, you might say, first, and this red polish, and highly polished up in there. The prisoner could be put in, I mean, if he was on a charge with it, for instance, if he struck an officer, we'll say, could be put in there until he had his trial. And they would have maybe taken out for casual duties, but you also got defaulters, which were, should we say, the lesser crimes, where you weren't actually put into the cells. You were maybe fined for reporting in late or improperly dressed on parade, polished if their brushes hadn't been polished, or trivial things, what we call trivial things. You would put on a 252 army charge form. And you had to go on what you used to classify as junkers. And when you were a defaulter, as it was known, and if you'd been given, we'll say, 7 days CV, which confined the barracks, you'd get reveille brought in the morning, and within a few minutes of reveille, you had to be dressed and report up to the guard room, to the regimental police. There was a sergeant there, or corporal, they used to have to go up there, and he would roll call you, call off the name, because there ought to be about anywhere from six to a couple of dozen of these defaulters going up there. You would have the roll call, and then you used to have to go back down and maybe on to PT, and then the breakfast and daily routine. But when it come to after tea, which normally you classed as being finished for the day, if you were on defaulters, you had to go up to the guard room, and you were given a few menial jobs to do, such as going down to the cookhouse and washing out the big Dixie tins and all these greasy, fatty cooking implements, which was done for the day. You were given these extra duties, of course, any of the mucky jobs, cleaning out the toilets and
Were any of the men treated cruelly in a way by hard officers or NCOs? Were there any that could be identified as that?
No, I can't really think of anything. I don't remember saying an officer hitting a recruit or even the NCOs. He was especially from, say, senior NCOs, you'd get some really, really marvellous language coming out. I don't know where they got the word from, but the more you go through life, the more you learn, of course. But amongst us, you must remember that one of the 70th Battalion, and which was actually the 70th YS, which was Young Soldiers Battalion, the Dunham Light Infantry. So there was some There's one lad, I think he was only 16, Bailey, they called him from York. He was in the same platoon, And he could put a safety razor blade in his mouth and chew it up. He was in Gavin Hand, but tried it, and lots of others didn't. But I think it was him as well that he was on parade, and he had a bit of down on parts of his face, and the sergeant said, "You haven't shaved this morning." He said, "I don't shave, sergeant." He says, "You do now." And you know, he was going to get a shave, so he was issuing with the razor and won't use it. But no, I can't remember any, you know, physical abuse or anything like that. I mean, things you read about in the army today, what apparently goes on in some of them, it was a different world altogether, I think, then.
There must have been, a slightly different way of treating you because you were so young, as against men who were older.
As I say, apart from being young, the training, we assume, what we did, was what the older people were doing. In fact, some of it was maybe more than what the others had done. And the route marches and that. And I think I mentioned the route march from Hindon up to Bransworth one day. Well,
yes,
towards your 40 mile there.
We've got that on tape. To come back to duties, did you do picket duties?
Oh yes, you would get guard duty or picket duty.
And I think you said the picket duty men paraded with the guard, did they?
Well, there was paraded for the guard. If I remember right, it was maybe about 6 o'clock, 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock when the guard used to change or whatever. But you'd get a picket. Maybe a couple of dozen or something like that. But the picket duty was just, they were more or less on guard, and they were detailed during the night to go in pairs, sort of hours on and hours off, which is similar to the guard duty or sentry duty, just guarding the camp. But you also used to go about in pairs.
So theirs was a kind of an internal duty within the camp confines.
Just wandering about there. I mean, you weren't told to walk up to that or march up to that end of there and down to the other. You were left there and it was your duty to guard the camp. But I don't remember every incident where the guard was called out. Because there's no enemy activity or
Were the picket men armed?
Yes. Yes, they were dressed. They didn't have the battle order, same as I think I explained previously. But when they were on duty, they just went about. They had the uniform on. If it was raining, you would put your ground sheet round you, and you had a rifle, and having 5 rounds of ammunition, which had to be more or less inspected and handed back in after you finished duty. But you didn't have live ammunition in the living quarters, we'd call it. No.
Were there any other duties other than guard and picket that you got involved in?
A duty, you could say. For instance, I remember once when we were at Hindon that there was a working party detail. For instead of parades or training, that this working party, which I was included in myself, we had to go to a farm near Sedgefield, and what we had to do there was fill in a bomb crater. an aircraft dropped a bomb in the farmer's field. I don't know what side of the side it would be now. It's maybe as big as this room, and it's about 18 foot across, easily have been that, and depth it must have been at the 12 foot or something like that. Even bits of trees had been damaged as well. I remember that helping to drag anyhow a tree that had fallen to put it in the hole and bring it up. Another duty that just passed my mind while we were talking was opposite to where we were behind, it was a farm. And this farmer, when it come to potato picking time, he used to get on and cut out some of the soldiers as neighbours to pick up the potatoes. I don't know There's quite a few, maybe a platoon, so about 30 men who were maybe going. He were following his tractor about and picking up the tables up and putting them in. And I was told that for our labours, the farmer paid 1 shilling per day for these potatoes. But he never offered us a cup of tea or a drink of water, or nothing. And it was more or less a day's job as well. The only refreshments was what was allowed from the camp.
Did you personally get the shilling a day?
Oh yes, I did take the ticket as well. Oh, I didn't get the shilling. No, the soldiers didn't get the shilling. The farmer paid, the government would say, 1 shilling per head per day. No, you didn't even get thanked off the farmers.
Did you get involved, I believe some of the companies did at Hindon, in local airfield defences?
Yes. Now, I didn't really think I'm joking with you, but was at Hindon after the initial training, when I was sort of cast as a trained soldier, would say, we're on parade one day, and the sergeant major said, can anybody ride a motorbike? So I put my hand up and was selected to go on a dispatch rider's carter, he was to call it there. So anyhow, I went on this, and not being big at it, but I did come out top of it because I was in the motor trade, I had a motorbike and all that. But so from then I was posted as a dispatch rider. But you were saying about the aerodrome defence, yes, there was more or less a company was put on aerodrome defence. One was called Goosepool, which is now Teesside Airport, that was one. There was another one at Catterick, which on a hill overlooking the aerodrome. That was the defence company for them. And also there was one at Scorton, which you call it there, that was more of a landing field, I would say. I think that was the three what were involved in, and were a company posted to each. And there it was just more or less the same as your sentry duty and your picket duty going round the aerodrome.
And was that a rota duty? Did you rotate?
The companies would rotate. Yeah.
How long would they be, say, on one airfield?
It's a bit difficult for them to tell you, too.
For a few weeks,
certainly. Maybe 2 to 3 months. Dispatch rider to the company. One incident there was the company commander called me to his office, and I was a dispatch rider, and it was to take a message to a Major Taylor, who was the second in command of the 70th, something like it'd be that time. And he said, it's in Londonderry. Well, immediately my thoughts went to Ireland. Oh, dear me. Anyhow, there he was explained to me, and what it was down the old A1 motorway, or road, it was in that way, A1 road. And I would think it must have been, about 30 to 40 miles. It was before you went to a turn off to York, I remember. It's Lundry. It was a big mansion, and these officers were there of some sort, of course. Anyhow, the time was winter time, and they had this motorbike, which was a BSA 500, and going from Goosepool, little St. George, and once I got to the actual A1, the road was just a mass of holes, one after the other, which had been formed by skid chains round heavy vehicles' tyres there. And if I came off once that night, I came off I don't know how many times, I was frozen stiff, literally. Eventually I found this place where Major Taylor was, knocked on the door, wasn't even invited in or anything, knocked on the door, and a message to Major Taylor, wait there. Major Taylor come, I remember, handed over the saluted him, handed over the message. I saw him open this message, read it, and his comment was, no, there was no need to send this. From there, it was just about turning it'll be way back away up to a minute. So the ice and falling off again and that, and it was just chug, chug, chug on the motorbike the whole journey then. But you know, it took me hours, literally hours. And when I got back to camp, I reported to the captain, which captain I wouldn't know, but reported to him, and he gave me a slip to go to the cookhouse to get some refreshments, we'll say. And I know what they did there. I got a cup of tea, and there was some leftover mashed potatoes, and it still sticks in my mind. They were put into a pan, and I think there was nearly as much fat went into it as what there was potatoes, and a bit of bread, and that was it. That was from my night's run.
Was that the usual kind of duty you had as a dispatch rider?
Well, the other duty was, there was like five of us dispatch riders, and the other duty was each day from Hyndon. This is when I was in Hyndon before being on detachment at the aerodrome, and your duty in the late afternoon was to take order or correspondence from Hyndon's headquarters to Scorton, Catterick and Goosepool. You go around and deliver these dispatches, as it were. I remember once at another incident at Goosepool, where they used to go up to the local post office, middle of St. George, and get the mail. And you're going to be here, but we got friendly with some of the pilots who used to have bombers. There used to be bombers from the Goosepool aerodrome, and often they would take us up when they went up for circuits and bumps, which maybe lasted about 20 minutes or half an hour. And really, you weren't supposed to go on these planes or mix with them. I went up to the post office, and the job was to get the battalion's mail from the post office. So coming back, going round the perimeter, and there was an RAF officer who had spoken to a bin with before, and I just said, any chance of, well, no, yeah, it's a right horse, we'll cover the motorbike up, and got into this plane, and off we went. from Goosepool, landed up over the North Sea, instead of just surfacing bumps round lines there over Darlington and the villages round about. And I think we were up for a good 2 hours. Right bollocking when I got back wearing the thing and all that. I got trouble with the motorbike. And I got away with it. Just one thing that passed my mind when we were talking.
What was the motorbike? What make was it?
VSA it was.
What was it like as a...
It was a steady old slogging bike. I only had one fault with it, and that was sent up to Durham Jail once to pick up a rifle that had been in possession of a deserter. I never saw the deserter, he was put into the jail. But coming back to camp, the motorbike let me down. The only time I remember being let down. And it was snow again on the road and frozen, my fingers with no feeling whatsoever. Where it got down was Eagles Cliff, not far from the camp. And there was a big barn looking building which I pushed the bike into, and by that a man came out and I said, what are you doing? Are you in trouble or what? And what it was, he was a bit of a mechanic as well, tried it out. And there's a little cover goes over the magneto which contained the contact points, in addition. They took that out, and in this little cap cover that went over was normally a piece of paper which was printed telling you the gap that the points had to be set at. And somehow it had dislodged and mangled up and got between the points. That was it. But apart from that, it was the motorbike itself. In fact, I bought one for myself after I was demobbed. Same model. And it was quite a while.
Did you get any additional clothing as a dispatch rider for riding bike?
Yes. Basically, from the waist upward, you could say, was same as the normal private slave. Apart from the hard crash helmet that it was put on. It wasn't a metal one, it was some sort of hard fabric. But down you had riding breeches, and you had boots which more or less came up to your knees, knee boots there. Then when the sergeant made you like you're a bit queer at it was one of the attachment at Sedgefield, if you remember there at Rome, and the first time he saw the I was greeted with a comment about now man, he says you look like a French letter pulled through a hedgerow backwards because I was in these tight riding breeches and the only one.